Oh, you're right. We'll just do, maybe I'll do a quick update for David, what we're doing. It's a little difficult to plug in now, but if you feel comfortable staying, fine. If you don't, that's fine, you know, as you wish. We've been working on this guy, Wolfgang Pauli. Pauli was one of the three founders of quantum physics. He had a crisis early in his life, went to see Jung. By the time the war came around, he was stable. He was a renowned physicist teaching in Zurich. And he was half Jewish, so when the Nazis started amassing around the Swiss border, he had to get out of Switzerland. If they invaded, being an Austrian citizen, he would have been, you know, swept right away into the camp. So he came to the States. He did not work on the Manhattan Project. He was only one of the few that didn't. But nevertheless, when the bombs went off, he got very depressed and turned down a position to stay at Princeton, went back to Zurich, taught at the Polytechnical University, and really fell into a very, kind of somewhere between depression and despair. Went back to see Jung, not so much as a patient, but as a colleague, and they worked on his dreams for the rest of his life about this despair he felt for what science had accomplished. And that's what we're working on, these 46 dreams. It's a tragedy. He really never is able to face what he needs to do. And what we've learned up to now, and then what we're going to watch from here on to the end, the basic idea of Jung is that, you know, the unconscious just doesn't hold information about you personally. It holds information about your time. And so, being that he was somebody who had so much influence on the science that shaped the time and now our time, his unconscious responded with a corresponding set of images to heal what's wrong with that, to really address his question, what's wrong with our age. And two main images have come up. One is Sophia. We'll talk about Sophia near the end of that series I'm doing for the Friends of Jung. Make a very long story short, she is a well-known figure in Hebrew legend and also a Gnostic legend. And basically what she represents is that spiritual experiences come through matter. That may not make sense at the moment, but that's what we're working with. And the other main figure is a figure he variously calls the master or the stranger, and if you had to pin it down mythologically, it would be Mercurius, alchemical Mercurius, who again represents the unity of matter and spirit. So that's just a very brief introduction. What we felt and what Jung felt the dreams were driving at was for Pauli to to begin to address this to the larger community, actually begin teaching courses on this, lecture on this, use his professorship to articulate, but he wouldn't do it because he would have lost face. He was a big shot in science, and this is not science. And he refused, and he died. He died at 58. And what we're where we are now is he's got a full understanding of what he's done. He's probably fallen in love with Jung's close associate, Marie-Louise von Franz. And he's running from her as he's running from his tasks. And the dreams are going to get very negative. And so we're basically dealing with a guy who's just dying. He's got about, 5 years to live, or 6 years to live from where we are now.
What is dying?
Cancer. Cancer at 58, pancreatic cancer. He was a stubborn jerk. He was really a jerk. But he was a guy trying to face himself, and he had some success, and he didn't have some success. So, quick review. Last time, we talked about Pauli's flip between accepting there is a complementary between physics and psychology, and thinking that physics would ultimately subsume psychology. That all sound familiar? The disagreement which we will pick up with today, or at least the apparent disagreement that put the wedge between him and Jung, eventually between him and von Franz, is his refusal to look at the psychological meaning of his dreams with physical imagery in them. He didn't want to take them psychologically. He wanted to see them as purely hints about where his research should go. And Jung insisted that dreams have psychological meaning, and that's where they parted ways. Then we had the dream of the stepmother, who was responsible for his mother's suicide. And he was screaming at her, which I felt was really important, that was in a strange way the life urge. Because she really did destroy, if you take the mother symbolically, his relation to the unconscious. Does it make sense if I put it that way? The maternal, as an object figure would be the man's relationship to the mother, but as an internal figure, she would be the portal to the unconscious. She is the unconscious. So, as an inner figure, the mother that is killed by her would be his inability to access the unconscious and communicate its point of view. And she says, and here I disagreed with our author, that it sounded like she was challenging him to at least get started on this job of recovering the past that he has lost, feeling and so on. And she says, can you not recover at least half of what you have? And I felt because it was the stepmother who was a negative feminine figure, and because at 55, halves don't count anymore, that she was a negative figure, and that she was really the part of Pali that was seducing him into saying, well, physics is going to subsume psychology, not psychology and physics are two equally valid disciplines in a complementary relationship.
What page is that dream on?
Let's see. 167, yeah. So we left off at 168. By the way, David, this is a book in German, which I've very crudely translated just so we can try to understand it, because I felt the material was that important. Well, the next thing that we're going to deal with are these two stars. And I think the author went way past what is necessary. Sometimes I agree with the author, and most of the time I agree. But here I don't. And I think when he stays with the dreams, he's okay, but then he really takes off. Do you remember, did you look and see what it is he's talking about? I don't know if we need to, how closely we need to focus on that. If you go back to D in the appendix, it's not translated. I wouldn't worry about this. I don't think it's relevant. But I'll just tell you what it is there in German. Figure 15.1. At the top it says light anima superior. Don't even worry about writing it down. I don't think it's that important. Maybe unless you want to, but the next one on the right says ego. And then the next one on the right, this part, pull the star, says dark anima, inferior prostitutes. The bottom, it says shadow projected totally on my father, negative feeling evaluation in dreams, and his writing's hard to read. I think it says repressed into Judaism. On the next here, woman in reality, mother. Again, I'm not sure what that is. Light side of the self is the next star, and I think it says projected into teacher, and I think that must mean his first teacher, Arnold Sommerfeld, who he liked quite a bit. And that was his attempt in a kind of fantasy way to think back over the main themes of his life and just write them down in some sort of pattern. What he did then in the next star, 15.2, is try to see how that had changed today. So at the top he writes master figure. And the reason I don't take this so seriously, there's no way in hell that the master figure was on top of his psychic hierarchy. We've seen how he didn't deal with that. So that's why where our author will then take this and run with it, I look at it and say, it's not true. Why bother? The next one on the right is light anima. Then on the right is ego. At the bottom, dark anima, superior, appears as a fascinating Chinese woman. Well, again, he says dark anima superior, meaning that he was giving her a superior place in his life. And we see he didn't give her a superior place in his life. So I take this with a grain of salt. But will lead to an important conclusion, so it's worth considering. Shadow is the next, and then woman in reality. I just think it's more of his, remember, uncommitted archetypal thinking. So I'm really going to skim over what our author writes. He makes a big deal of it. I think he's just...
Well, being feminine, I guess. One being feminine, one being
feminine. I just think it's baloney. I mean, to my feeling, the first thing you've got to do when you look at a piece of unconscious material is say, is it genuine? I don't think it's genuine.
But it's an old image.
Yeah, I know the star is old, but he sees that there is a triangle.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what our guy makes out of it is it's a conjunction image, blah, blah, blah. But just because you draw an image doesn't make it real, That's my feeling. And we'll see what von Franz does with it. I mean, the author goes on and on and on and on, and then you'll see what von Franz does with it in about five sentences, and she nails it. And it's the difference between a guy who doesn't really know what he's doing and someone who does. And what you see, which is, I think, so dangerous about our field, is you get all these images, and you get so lost in the image, you forget to ask, what does it apply to? And that's what he does. He gives this brilliant archetypal analysis, but it doesn't. It's not true. And she just goes boom, and so we can look at that. So maybe we will look at least at what he said underneath each drawing, because I have that letter which I passed around and showed you. I went back and checked, and sure enough, he did write under each drawing a couple of sentences. And under the first drawing, he wrote, now back to 168, religion, rational enlightenment, evil, I strongly discovered in World War, and should be in the First World War, but I thought one can get rid of it through reforms and relationship problems, always between opposing pairs of opposites, light anima, shadow, I, mother, spiritual self, dark anima. So that's his commentary to the two. But I don't think it's relevant. that was to the first picture. The second picture he wrote on 169. The relationship to physics cools down. Again, we've seen that's not true. A positive relationship to the Kabbalah and Hasidim arises. That couldn't be if he was still so rational. Out of that flood, good and evil appear in perspective. And don't correspond with light, spiritual, and dark thonic. Again, I don't think he believed that, or he would have stuck with von Franz. Religions looked for, that's probably true. Vision of youth threatened to be lost. The values of youth threatened to be lost. They were long lost. At the high point of his face, standstill ensues with the anima projection on women in reality. And more of the same garbage, I think, in my active imagination. I've dealt with the relation chief problem of the master, there's a dark anima, a problem which fell to you. It ended with the dark anima sufficiently differentiated to increase in stature, making it also possible for the shadow to decrease in intensity. And yet we saw him leaving with his hat and coat. See, that's the shadow. And so it didn't decrease in intensity. She was too dependent on him, while mirror-wise the shadow was too dependent on the light. Just garbage. He again, more garbage. At the moment, a great transformation is in process. That simply can't be the truth. I believe I see where the journey goes, as I now see the master not only good, the shadow not only bad, and the countryside around Lake Adder. Lake Adder is, I don't really know, it must be a lake in Austria that he would go to for summer fun. And it was the area, we alluded to it before, and we'll come back to it again, I'm pretty sure, or maybe not. He had that earlier dream of a boar telling you only in twos can you come to the promised land. Do we do that yet or not?
Mm-hmm.
We did that. Yeah. That's the area he's referring to. So it's just a, you know, an old comfortable home spot. So he thinks he's seeing the goal, but of course he isn't. And then he says, I find it how beautiful Pali sees the meaning of the Chinese woman with her ring eye. That's what, again, I think author is being bamboozled. Pali doesn't see anything.
Well, he glimpses it, but it's like he doesn't know what he's seen. Did you say that? I mean, the image comes up.
So I find it tragic how Pali sees the meaning. That he sees it, but
that
doesn't.
That he's accomplished what the symbol.
Well, he sees it, but he doesn't. He views it, but he doesn't see it.
Understand.
Yeah, he sees it, but he doesn't understand.
Although he talks like he does.
Although he talks like he does. And our author will go back and forth between feeling that he has accomplished something and then that he hasn't.
Is that so, Gary, like when we see something intellectually, but we don't
right.
put it into effect, or we can't
right.
quite get there?
Yeah, right.
It's all
up in there, yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be all right, except he acts like he has understood it emotionally. And that's, you know, I think all understanding starts with that, you know, intellectual grasp, but then you realize, well, you know, I've got it, but boy, I sure haven't fully understood it.
I don't live it.
And so these insights always kind of breed a kind of humility. Yeah, I've understood something, but I've also understood how far I am from living that. And that's what's missing.
Does it also happen that sometimes people have a deep and intuitive sense, but they don't have the intellectual?
Yeah, I think it does happen. Yeah.
That's my sense.
Not with a guy like him, because people who knew him said he was more brilliant than Einstein. He must have had a ferocious intellect. So not with a guy like him. Then the author does come back to the real point on 170. But then the intellectual academic breaks through. To steer the process in an old direction once again. So that's for sure.
Can I say one thing that I look at systematically with translation on page 168 is a script that made reference to the unitary filters.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was striking how arrogant this theoretical physics are. The goal of that unitary, and maybe this is what Pauli feels is the arrogance of what is possible. The unitary field theory is trying to synthesize four fundamental forces, the strong nucleus, the weak nucleus, electromagnetic, and gravity. But they hope that these then will be the theory of everything. Now, that's just an interesting. I mean, I guess a quote from somebody in the field. Not Pauline, but this is the thing. Huh?
Yeah, that whole video that you did on this basically came up with all these lines. That's quite a task. You haven't seen that video, right?
Is that a...
Brian Green?
Oh, yeah. I've got it. We got a video. But I thought that was arrogant. And that's not politics, it's the people.
Oh, yeah. And they're still working on it. You know, I think much more prosaically, it's an attempt to unite quantum physics and Einstein. Because I guess they're mutually contradictory. But yet somehow applicable.
But that's in Pauli's idea that psychology and all the other will be
brought together. Right, right. And the psychology will be one component of that.
Right.
Right. And something else I wanted to say. Pauli worked on that at the end of his life. He thought he had solved it. I think we'll get to that eventually. I don't know whether he mentions it or not. But Heisenberg thought that he had solved it and called up Pauli. They always remained friends despite the war. And they worked on it together, and Heisenberg sent to the German newspaper an article that said, we solved it. And it was published with Pauli's name on it. Yeah, and Pauli withdrew his friendship from Heisenberg from then on, because it was not true. It really made Pauli look like a fool. Here's more just nonsense talk. It must have to do with the synthesis of the phase of my youth and the later phase. So first, from 2 times 6 comes 12, which corresponds to the zodiac and its natural script. Namely, its ancient division into 4 trigones. That is the goal that is hanging in front of me. That is where I want to go. The question that Professor Jung posed at the end of his letter, how does one get from 3 to 4? I would like to answer, one cannot get from 3 to 4, but there are different ways to get 2, 3, and 4. My way goes, however, over the 2 times 6, the zodiac, because the ancient is always the new. And what we're going to see shortly, he's going to repudiate that. In a funny way, there's something to it if you think of the zodiac holding our fate. On one level, you can see there's a grain of truth to that, that his fate was to deal with these questions. But it's all intellectual.
What do you think he means by you can't get from 3 to 4? Means that's a personal...
Oh, I think he's being witty.
Oh.
There's not only one way, there are many ways, and I found an even better way. It's not 3 to 4, it's 2 to 6. 2 times 6.
Is the I've got to look at it. You know, but when you get to, when you're trying to go from one number to another, you have to do it by symmetrical means. So like you have one, you know, one of them, you divide it equally into 2 parts, and you get 2.
Yeah.
Then you can divide if you have 2 of them. You can divide that into and get, you know, like 1 each. But there's no way you can think of having 3 or something and dividing it symmetrically and get 4.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do that symmetrically.
Right.
That 1 from 1 number to another. And there's no way you can think of by doing that with 1 from 3 to 4.
Of course, 3 to 4 as a symbol, you know, is... Young man.
Well, I mean, you can't think of it as a symbol going from 3 to 4, but you can't do it mathematically.
Yeah.
You think that's what he's thinking of mathematically?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Can I finish your thought on Jung's idea of going from 3 to 4, that was acceptable?
Yeah, that's the big deal. Because you can think of it typologically, but don't limit yourself to it typologically, that we in theory, 3/4 of us can be made conscious, but 1/4 never will become conscious. Will always remain problematic. And so wholeness is accepting what you can't accomplish as well, and living in relationship to it rather than thinking you're going to master it. And that's the beginning of humility. No matter how much you work, you're always going to stub your toe on something. And something will always overwhelm you.
Formulate an explanation, then you've got power over it.
Right.
And
yep.
Yeah, he's trying to have
right. Right. So in the midst of all of this, I think we can skip over to 171. We get a dream, which is genuine. Which is genuine.
Oh.
I'm always, it's like getting a breath of fresh air when you get a dream. And it's probably one of his more important dreams. A Chinese woman elevated to the rank of Sophia, this is the Sophia image I was talking to you about, is present together with two men. One is the master, the other is a contemporary physicist. His shadow. We're going to have to look at that thought. I am the fourth. She says to me, you must let us play chess in every conceivable combination. Then I awake. My mood has changed. I was not completely awake, and a strange, possibly feminine voice in me seems to speak the following sentences to me, quickly and clearly. I will never forget these. The experience had a definite, numinous character, obviously of an archetypal nature. Now listen to these sentences and their straight talk. Your drawings, the six-sided star, that's why we need to go into it, are partly right and partly wrong. It is right that the number of lines equals six. It is wrong, however, that the number of points equals six. Look here. And I saw a square with a clearly marked off, with clearly marked off diagonals. Do you finally see the four and the six, that is 4 points and six lines, or six pairs from 4 points? The lines are identical with the number six in the I Ching. There, the six is right. It entails as a latent factor also the number three. Now observe the square more closely. Four of the lines are of equal length. The other two are longer. They are irrationally related. There is no point with 4 points and six equal lines. For this reason, symmetry cannot be statically produced, and a dance results. The conjuncture refers to the exchange of places during this dance. One can speak of a game of rhythms and rotations. Therefore, three, already contained in a latent form in the square, must be dynamically expressed. That is why the formula of four squares by Jung in its way is, in its way, perfect. Since the dynamics have been explicitly dealt with there at Ion. For the same reason, the image of the world clock is in its way right. Remember that? World clock dream. Since three rhythms are contained in it. Therefore, the images of the zodiac are not yet sufficient, since 12 is an imperfect number. It seemed to me a wise and a just assessment through a kind of subordinate authority, and I made up my mind to stay connected with it.
So was all of this his quote up to imperfect number? That's Pauli speaking?
And it seemed to me.
And that too?
Yeah. That's his dream and his half-waking dream.
I can't see. Where does the figure stop giving it input? do you suppose?
Because
this is Pali's words after down here.
It seemed that's Pali. But from your drawings until imperfect number, that's the voice. No, I'm just waiting.
Therefore the images of the zodiac are not yet sufficient. He's not ready for his fate yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the underlying implication.
Yeah, I think
he's
so.
He's not getting the dance to the unconscious part of himself.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep.
And I don't know very well why it's called an imperfect
number. I don't think it is. Unless... What's a perfect number? Does anyone know? Imperfect?
Oh,
is it? Oh. No, never mind. Are you thinking of prime numbers?
Yeah.
Would a perfect number be a number that has a square root, maybe? That has a whole number square root? So 16? Right. Have you heard this term before, a perfect number? I've never even heard it before.
I haven't. Except, you know, before it was completion
number. No, but mathematics. I'm thinking maybe it's a term for numbers that have a square, that have a whole number square root. 16 would be a perfect number. 9. 4. I don't know. Good question, though. I could look that up.
I couldn't follow also why he wants to, in a sense, trash. But he, like you were saying, he was praising the zodiac and then he puts it down.
Right. But Dara is struck by an instinctive aversion. You know what might be the easiest? Is that we hear von Franz's interpretation and then we can go through and just skim the rest of it, and I think if you see it in context, what she says, I thought, is so beautiful, and that's at the very back of it. Oh yeah, page 175. Pauli always wanted something static, permanent, outside himself, natural philosophy instead of therapy. The double triangle is too static. One sentence. We've got four pages of Hindu, and it's ridiculous. There, fire and water are united tightly. Then the Chinese woman shows him in the dream the dancing square. That expresses the conjunctio. The union of opposites is only momentary, as in a dance. The pair must be fine with themselves and then again separate. Anima comes and goes. And conjunctio is an experience, a wonder. This symbol, should be, is not static but moves. The conjunctio does not let itself be held onto statically, rationally. Pauli always wanted to bring the opposites together with power rather than in experience. Isn't that beautiful? That's somebody who's living it. The square?
What
don't you understand?
It sounds like you can confirm something.
Which sentence?
That I sin.
The square means realization, making real the real wholeness in life, also making the idea of synchronicity something real and actual. I don't see that exactly. Well, he's being shown that is the way to go. And it's not the way he's going.
Because he's not seeing it dynamically.
He's not seeing it dynamically. Right. Which would mean, you know, that he would have to give in to his feelings for her. And there would be moments of triumph in the relationship, there'd be moments of heartache, there'd be moments of discovery, there'd be moments of reevaluation, there'd be shared insights, there'd be disagreements, and out of that would come a work of depth. The other thing I checked on was this business of chess. He doesn't mention chess at all, our author. But apropos the astrology reference, the origin of chess is apparently in India. And the original meaning of chess was it was kind of an augury. And it was thought that the two people playing chess were acting out the battle of the gods in heaven. So the chess game was a mirror image of the dynamic in heaven at the moment of that game. And that's very close to astrology, that the game of chess implies a earthly level and a cosmic level, and that the earthly level is a reflection of the pattern of the cosmic level. I think if you know that, for this dream, the chess makes a lot more sense. That what he's being invited to do is get to know his cosmic pattern, his a priori self in our language, which was to address the world publicly on these issues. And hence the static way isn't going to work, but the dynamic way will. That's how I would understand the dream. Cosmic and earthly, in an argument, two people who are mature, hearing each other's point of view, and then trying to put themselves in each other's shoes, you know, giving up a particular standpoint, at least temporarily, to try to see. Her trying to look at the thing from the point of view of physics, him from psychology. I think any of those that creation is a fluid process. I think that's the main point of the next pages, which we can almost skip. There is one thing that I do lament over. At page 172, apparently von Franz had some dreams about the atom bomb. And if we only had those dreams. His letters to her were saved, but her letters to him were destroyed by his wife at his death, so we don't have them. Would that have been nice? And so you can see, imagine if those two had worked on those dreams together. Wow, what we could have. That's the tragedy of it. And somehow it apparently involved Sophia. If I ever have a chance to sit down with Darrell Sharp, who's friends with the the executor of von Franz's estate, I'm going to see if these dreams exist. But it says right here. After further reflection, you see that last quote on 172. It seems to me that this is indeed the psychological correspondence to the atom bomb which your dream spoke of. Owing the thonic wisdom of Sophie, who is not only light but is in the same as your dark, can compensate the evil tendencies of the rational intellect. Now that, of course, we know from working on this. But it's said so succinctly. There he's on it, you know. If he could have just stayed on it with that attitude and her dreams, his science, his psychology, who knows what we would have now. But I have to wait till the right moment to see if I can find it. But they might exist somewhere in a file. Who knows?
Are you going to talk about on 173 here what our author says about psyche versus spirit? I was a little confused.
Well, sure, if you'd like. I wasn't going to, but...
Where is that?
173. I think we basically covered that dream, so... I will skip to the end unless you have questions and you have a question, so let's look at it. The difference between psyche and spirit, that's your basic question?
Well, the way the author talks about it, I understand more the way Jung is talking about it in the quote. I don't quite understand the author's take.
Can you give me an example?
The point that Polly is here citing refers to the question of psyche and spirit.
Yeah.
In Jung's view, psyche designates the substance of all inner world phenomena. Okay.
Well, not really.
Spirit.
Yeah.
Characterizes a certain category of the sense.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I understand that, but
it's that word psyche is a hard.
Is in spirit more like a dynamism instead of a category?
Yeah. Originally, psyche meant. You know, it's one of those words that's hard to describe. The sum total of psychological processes, conscious and unconscious.
Right.
So you could say the psyche is our psychological part. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to express. But it gets really complicated when you bring in synchronicity, because we know that matter operates like a dream. So the psyche must be more than psychological. That's where it gets complicated. But I think for all practical purposes, you can look at Jung's first definition of psyche and just say it's our psychological part. Not our physiological part, not just our mental part, but the whole perceptive, responding, emotional, thinking, image-generating part of ourselves.
So the psyche is the, yeah.
It's the bigger picture. General
picture,
term.
And he's trying to talk about spirit.
Spirit would just be the drive to create images in the psyche.
Isn't Jung, in Jung's quote, isn't he talking about making a reference to spirit, what's happened to spirit in the modern sense where it's been co-opted by the intellect?
Right, right.
And so he's not actually, he's using it in the modern term, but they don't tell us that. Either.
Right.
And they go from talking about it in the way that Jung defines it to then Jung talking about it in the modern sense and what's wrong with it.
Right. Yes,
okay.
You're correct.
Okay. And so, then one other question about that paragraph.
Yeah.
Okay. He says... Oh, no, I forgot my question. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Okay.
It's fine. The two basic we've got, because I know you guys are covering this, but this is the kind of question.
Yeah, I'm sure you're feeling overwhelmed. But.
Well, this is more basic than that, but matter operates like a dream. And what do you mean by that? That in the physical matter, the intelligence in the physical matter, if you look at the events and circumstances in your life, that they, there's symbols for for what ones that can tell, give one information.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You're familiar with Jung's word synchronicity, probably, right?
Yeah.
So, the issue that's implicit here, maybe you know this, maybe not. Let me just throw it out. That he originally limited symbol formation to dreams. I mean, I can't say he limited. That's where he first came across it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he later realized that symbols also appear in reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that must mean that whatever generating symbols isn't only within the person. It's somehow also in matter. Otherwise, matter could not operate symbolically. Now, the reason that's so important, that's what are bringing Jung and Pauli together. Because Pauli's business is matter as a physicist. And he, through his crisis, could realize there is such a thing as synchronicity. And that physics had no way of accounting for it. And so that's what brought him to Jung, to the Jungian dialogue to begin with. And Jung was interested in working with a physicist who could acknowledge this fact as a way of helping him articulate how his psychology needed to be broadened to account for this fact, that matter can operate symbolically.
One sentence that you said that I haven't quite gotten my cerebral carburetor, that symbols, they appear in dreams, they appear in reality. And then the next sentence after that.
Maybe matter?
It was something like, since you have them both, in dreams and in reality.
Whatever it is that's generating them,
right,
isn't merely a psychological phenomenon.
Oh, right. Okay. Right.
So
that's it.
Our psychology must somehow be smeared out over the world. And, you know, both Jung and Pauli knew that this doesn't make any sense, but these were the conclusions they were forced to draw if they took these experiences seriously. And that's what interested them in each other. They both could agree on that fact. So from the psychologist's point of view, what's the nature of matter? From the psychologist's point of view, what's the nature of the psyche that it can operate materially? And from the physicist's point of view, what's the nature of matter that it can receive the actions of the psyche?
Yeah.
And they were both open enough to say, you know, this is a valid question. And I don't think you'll find many scientists who would even admit it's a valid question.
Mm.
And Jung liked Pauli so much, and Pauli being a complete jerk, you've missed some of the real jerk behavior. And we've asked, why did he stay with him? I think for this reason. Jung knew this was a valid question, and to have a scientist at the top of the heap share the same question meant a tremendous amount to him. Most of the time when you try to discuss this with scientists, they laugh at you like you're a flake, or, you know, it's maddening, because they are facts. And Pauli would admit, yeah, they're facts. And we at some point will come to grips with it. Now, they collided over how that's going to happen. Pauli thought physics would incorporate psychology, and Jung was saying, well, no, we are two disciplines working on two sides of the same question, and we're going to remain two disciplines, and who knows where that will go in the future. We'll see in a moment what that meant to Pauli, why he was so threatened by it, I think.
Gary?
Yeah.
If this is clear enough, I'm too long.
Okay.
But I'm sitting here trying to, this idea of psyche and spirit,
mm-hmm.
Let me just throw this out to see if it makes sense.
Yeah.
As you're describing it, you know, and you're talking about the psyche being the inner substance, so let's just imagine a dream sequence, for example,
mm-hmm.
in which there is a tree and an apple and two people.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 weeks later, it's the same, it's the tree and an apple and two people, but in one dream, say it's nighttime, and
mm-hmm.
the dream is daytime.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think of those images that start showing up as the interceptions of the psyche, things mm-hmm. that it knows.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the spirit is creating the dance among those various objects
exactly
that ultimately
right.
give it meaning.
Yeah.
So depending on the context that tree is in, I mean, it can look exactly the same. And that's what gets so hard to understand is that you have to have the capacity to hold the energy of the dance that's in it contextually in order to see it
yeah.
symbolically.
Well, the first thing is having the imagination to receive the psyche.
Right.
Now, where I would fine-tune a bit, I think you could almost use as a synonym for spirit evolution. So the way the second dream evolves from the first dream would be a manifestation of the spirit.
How it's evolved. It's,
yeah.
It's because I said it's the dance of the dynamism, it's the bringing together of this, you know, it's, you know, because just a tree in its own is a concretized form. It's the context that it's in a dance with around it that gives it the meaning. And so, in the
well, yes, but for me, spirit would be when you've understood that first dream and the second dream comes along with more information than was contained in the first dream. That would be the spirit. Moves it forward.
So it's a so I think of it as a movement.
As a movement.
That's the dance, the dynamism, and I think the challenge for, you know, you have to be able to live with paradox. And you have to believe that there's a truth in that. You have to use a lot of both and.
Yeah.
You have to be able to use the word if.
Yeah.
You know, which can be an anathema to a scientific mind.
Yeah.
Where they don't want to have to hold all the
right.
tension of both energies.
Right. Absolutely, you have to hold that. And then the spirit, our Jung's view is the spirit then is what moves that into resolution.
Right. And then the insight, it's like the insight then drops into you.
Drops into
you,
exactly.
If you can hold
if you can
all
hold
those
it.
Energy,
yeah.
which is the spirit of the dance.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
So then they're talking about the problem here, and Jung is talking about in the Arctic, in the patriarchal world,
well, because, and that's what got me thinking about it, because when you're in a patriarchal dynamic, it's a particular dynamic that holds a certain energy that you participate in. I mean, it's part of the collective that
yeah,
you...
Yeah, what does that mean,
I guess,
in reality?
Well, so the reality is the ability to see through to where the image wants to go. And so it doesn't always keep going back to affirm the static position.
Absolutely. The patriarch can't stand that these images have an intention of their own.
Right. Beyond
their
affirmation of their point of view.
Right. And you can be sure it's not going to affirm their point of view.
And it's easy to keep going back and getting trapped if that's all you know and you can't pull up the imaginary realm.
Right.
And then be willing, which is the hard part, to say, what the hell do you mean? I don't get it. I know
mm-hmm.
it's not this, but I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to hold out, what is it?
Yeah.
It's that's the first dream. And so I always said he just keeps going back to try to capture it. And don't have it change.
And, the, you know, I worked on those Minoan rings.
Mm-hmm.
And remember those?
Yeah.
And it's thought to be a religious ceremony in which the death and rebirth of the goddess is celebrated. And on the ring is a picture of a tree being torn down. And then there's a picture of a dove descending. So the tree being torn down would be the death of the mother. And the bird descending would be the rebirth of the mother. And in the Minoan version, which is not patriarchal, it's matriarchal, the supplicant who witnesses the revelation of the dove is on his knees. In the patriarchal version, he's standing. So that ability to give up conscious intention and receive what's coming on your knees, vulnerable to its power, not in a position of power, I think it's an amazing series of images. Yeah. Let's take it. Let's take a stretch.
The patriarchy had its problems.
Oh, it had its problems too. Yeah. But I think it's...
Did the rut reach the right mix?
No, I think the challenge is to unite the two.
Did anyone see the show, the Nova on the bonobo and the chimp, matriarchy versus patriarchy, how they've been studying it in the great apes? Fascinating.
When was it on?
I brought my notes on it. It was on like February 18th they showed it.
I bet you could buy it. Huh?
You can buy it. It's called The Last Great Ape, The Bonobo in All of Us. And I guess chimps are patriarchal, violent, male-dominated, males eat first, females are abused. The bonobo are matriarchal. The son stays with the mother the whole life. If she dies,
he loses.
Yeah, there's one, the big problem I came up with first. And sex is uses a greeting and a ritual. And I guess when chimps, two separate bands of chimps come together, there's usually like a war. But if two bonobo come together, the males sort of start to duke it out, but the females go behind the scenes and start grooming each other and chatting each other up, and it all dissipates. But they theorize that they see in our behavior, bonobo behavior and chimp behavior, and we must have a common ancestor, and you know, those two traits.
What's a bonobo? Is that a type of chimp? Or?
It is the great ape that we're the closest related to. It is the only other animal, I guess, or not other animal, perhaps mammal, that has sex all the time, like people do.
As opposed to being in heat.
As opposed to, you know, under the cycles of heat. Mm-hmm. It's like they've evolved sex into a ritual. Mm-hmm. It's not just for procreation.
The chimps only do it for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Do they attribute morality to the novel? Because I just saw a headline on something that they're finding in the apes a morality. It's something, a new study, but I wonder if it's...
Yes, the bonobo have compassion.
I didn't read it, so yeah, there's...
Right, the bonobo are known for their compassion to other members. And they show concern if one of the other ones is pouting or has been hurt.
And don't chimps do that?
Not so much, I guess. They're isolated. Even females are isolated from one another because of the power structure of the males. But it's really fascinating, and it, you know, sort of really amplifies the whole idea of matriarchy versus patriarchy that he gets into.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do you spell it?
B-O-N-O-B-O. In fact, you know the painting, Bob Lerbecca, the psyche?
Mm-hmm.
That's a bonobo hand. And I never realized the significance of that until I heard that.
B-O-N-O-B-O.
Yeah.